You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Miles to Go podcast. We're going to start off with Seth Miller from PaxX.Aero talking about Wi-Fi and just a bit about his Norwegian flight. And then after that, we'll transition into some quick reviews on places that you may not have thought that you should be going. And we'll try to throw in a deal segment before we run out of time today. Before we get started, just want to ask for a couple of quick things. If you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, love to have you subscribe. If you haven't rated it, you know, please give it a rating. Those help us move up the search results and get more people listening, which, you know, quite frankly, is the goal. And finally, if you have questions, you can shoot me those questions at ed@pizzainmotion.com. That's my blog in case you're not familiar with it. And I'll do my best to get you an answer. You might even heard your question read on a future episode. And with all that housekeeping set aside, I want to welcome in back to the podcast Seth Miller, who just showed up in, hopefully I get this right, Copenhagen?
Yeah, I did indeed. And I have to say, I'm liking this tradition we have of every time I'm a guest on your show, I'm in a different city.
Yeah, no, I mean, that isn't hard for you given your travel schedule. So let's be honest, it's, you know, that's not difficult. Over time, hopefully we'll cover all the cities and all the podcast episodes.
There you go.
So you, and before we talk too much Wi-Fi, you and I were chatting last night before you got on board your flight. Last night being a couple days ago now, since we're recording on Monday. But you took Norwegian over, which, you know, I've had some pretty good experiences with. How was your experience overseas? You upgraded to premium, right?
Yeah, so I did the Fort Lauderdale to Copenhagen route in the premium economy, which they just call premium seat. Grabbed a window seat, got on board. I was mostly pleased with the experience. Say at Fort Lauderdale, there's no lounge available, so that was a little frustrating since I was at the airport way too early because it's a midnight departure and there's not much else to do.
Yeah,
sitting around waiting, and so I could have used, you know, somewhere to sit. And it's not even that I wanted a free drink; it's that I wanted like a drink at all. The bars were all closed in that part of the terminal, so that was weird. And then other than that, you know, got on board. There's a blanket, but no pillow.
Yeah.
And I forgot my eye mask. So I wrapped a T-shirt around my head and I pulled my blanket up and I put some earplugs in. And 5 hours later, I woke up as we were passing through Iceland and, you know, dozed a little more. I only had the second meal. There's a departure meal and then the arrival meal. I only had the arrival meal. It was similar to the sort of European style meat and cheese platter that you get on many other airlines flying into Europe. I would have, with the midnight departure, you know, and it lands, it's 3 p.m. local time. So I would have said they should swap the two meals for the late night departure and give people a light snack at, you know, 1 a.m. by the time you're in the air, and a more substantive meal at noon at lunchtime on arrival. But that's a, you know, picking nits, if you will, in terms of the service on board. And you know, the flight attendants were nice. The plane got there. The boarding was something of a disaster, but I've sort of become used to that when departing the United States. So I don't know. All in all, solid product.
Yeah, I mean, I've enjoyed it the couple times I've flown it. I definitely think, you know, depending on what you can score the premium seat for, there's plenty of value there. I enjoyed my second meal more than my first meal. The last time I flew it, it was a chunk of salmon with a salad, and it was, you know, actually a pretty good piece of salmon for smoked.
That was westbound, though, right?
That was westbound. Yeah, it was. And I agree.
I'm going to do that tomorrow. I expect similar experience with enjoying it that way.
Yeah, I mean, the first meal was fine. It was some turkey or something like that. It was okay. But I think the seats plenty fine for the price. Like, it's not lie flat, to be clear. But I think, you know, I think you said you paid less.
It's premium economy.
Right. Well, yeah. And you paid a $200 premium for the flight home?
Yeah. So on the way over, I paid a little more. And that was just I bought these tickets on Friday for a Sunday departure. I had barely 48 hours notice that this trip was happening. So sure. Expected to pay a little more and did. On the return, it was I ended up buying like a $300 one-way Copenhagen to JFK, and then, you know, 36 hours later or 24 hours later, got an email saying, do you want to bid for an upgrade? I bid the minimum, which was $185 extra, and it cleared a couple hours later. So very much a low-end or low-price play for premium economy for the westbound. And, you know, my theory on that was the $300-ish dollars I paid for my window seat in the back was fine. And I bought the package that included the meal and whatever. So it would have been what it is what it is. I don't love their food necessarily, but, you know, it's calories that gets me home. And then for basically $20 an hour, I got the big seat. And that was a price point. And it gives me a power plug. And it's during the day so I can get some writing done. There's a lot of good reasons to make that decision at $20 an hour.
Yeah, I agree. I'd certainly, as you and I discussed, certainly pay more for an eastbound flight on a red eye to get the extra sleep. But you know, I think I definitely would have paid the what you paid to, for the westbound as well, to have the mostly the work time, just to be able to have the elbow room, you know, and a little bit more comfort, not necessarily the food, but the ability to work for 3 or 4 hours on that flight, even with a nap is huge. And I would definitely pay that, in the future again.
Yeah.
So rolling around inside my head when I was coming up with a podcast segment this week was Spirit's decision to add Wi-Fi. And I had started out to write a blog post about it, and then I saw that you had posted about it. And so I figured that'd be a great fit for a podcast segment. And so I guess let's start out with a sort of a brief summary, and we'll obviously link to the post in the show notes. But, you know, give folks a rundown of what you expect Spirit to charge for a session. I know we don't have all the details, and, you know, loosely what you think, you know, how well you think the service might perform.
Okay. I'm going to do those in the order opposite of what you suggested, because
I think
what it is more important than how much it costs. And we'll get to it eventually. No, so what Spirit is doing is starting later this year, they're going to fit their entire 120-ish plane fleet with satellite connectivity. They're going to do it pretty quickly, plane every 3 days or so on average, and they're going to get it all done within a year. So they say by the end of summer 2019, the full fleet will be connected, which is an aggressive schedule. I like that. I like that they're going full fleet, and I like that they're doing it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah. So what it will be is, you know, satellite connectivity. And if you go back, I think it one of the early episodes, we talked about sort of the different options and how it all works. This is Ka band satellite, which doesn't really mean anything or matter too much from a passenger perspective. But it's with a partner called Thales, and Thales has only one customer really in most of the markets where this hardware will be flying, and that's Spirit. So all of the bandwidth that Thales has available is going to go to these airplanes, which is good news from a passenger perspective. You know, assuming Thales bought enough, which I think they did, it's a good coverage area. It covers almost every Spirit flight start to finish. Things like Quito and Lima are outside the bottom at the very end. Mm-hmm. But the full Caribbean is covered. Otherwise, all of North America is covered. So, you know, from that perspective, it's good news. And then, you know, it's going to be available, and it should be fast. They're promising sort of streaming media as an option. One of the interesting things about the package they put in place is that there's not going to be the sort of streaming movies on board, which Delta, American, United, JetBlue, sort of everybody else has done at this point. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, if it's fast enough service, you can stream your own YouTube or Netflix, but they also have a couple dozen movies on board usually. And Spirit is not doing that. So it's only your own Netflix or whatever other service you have. So that's a little surprising to me. But putting that aside, they are saying if you buy the streaming package, you can stream Netflix. You can stream your YouTube. You can stream Hulu, whatever, you know, service you happen to love these days. So, you know, the good news is that they've told us it's going to be an option to buy a streaming package. So we know that there should also be a more basic service package if you're not into the streaming sort of thing, which means multiple price points. It should be more affordable for the low end stuff, especially. And they've said to start, at least they expect the average session to cost $650. So depending on how long the flight is and if you're going for streaming or messaging or whatever, it should be a relatively affordable connection. And so if we put aside JetBlue, which is free for everybody for streaming level, and the sort of free SMS, WhatsApp messaging level stuff that I think Delta and Alaska and American now all offer in some way, shape, or form, you have a pretty decent price compared to what everybody else is charging for just a connection, right? A United flight, odds of getting something under $650 for a couple hour flight are pretty low. Delta or American on the GoGo platform, they're also similar, or Alaska, all similarly unlikely to get a, you know, $6 or $8 plan for a couple hours, in my experience. So I think it's definitely going to be price competitive.
Yeah, I think
what it actually turns out to be.
Yeah, I think the cheapest I can recall seeing on a United flight was $6. I don't know that I've seen that in a while. So I would agree that if the bottom of the barrel package that they offer, the non-streaming package, averages $650, yeah, I think that's extremely price competitive. You know, Southwest is one of the consistently cheapest at $8 per flight, sort of as a one-stop shop. Per day. But that's not streaming. So this is in the realm of that, which I've always considered the Southwest service to be a fairly good deal, especially compared to some of the pricing that we see from United and the airlines that have GoGo.
Yeah. So no, I think that pricing wise, it's going to be very competitive and compelling for a decent number of passengers. You know, no power still on board. So bring your power brick if you're going to stream a movie on your iPhone or whatever. You're going to run your battery down too. And that's got to be frustrating for travelers. I know it is for me, and I assume everybody else is just like me. So
that's a horrible thought.
Oh God, don't let that happen.
Yeah. We don't need more SAS. You know, the power thing doesn't bother me as much. I just find, I do carry a fairly big, anchor battery with me, and my iPad gets, 6 or 7 hours. So as a general rule, I don't fly long haul, low cost carriers like Spirit or Frontier. And a big part of that is just, being disconnected for that period of time on those airlines, with no Wi-Fi. So, 2 hours is probably about my limit. I think I've done a couple of 3 hour flights later in the evening on Frontier. Having Wi-Fi on Spirit now would certainly give me a little bit more likelihood that I might book a longer flight. Again, at least for me, I'm still always looking at, from a business traveler, if this Spirit plane breaks, what's the walk-up fare for United or American or Delta that I'm buying to get me to the meeting I need to get to as a backup plan?
Right. Yeah. And, I would say the other challenge with the long flights is on Spirit is the seats are less padded. I mean, I've done Fort Lauderdale, New York-ish a few times with them, and it's fine. But, you start getting an hour more on that, start going to the middle of the country and beyond. I wonder about the reliability of my tuchus on those seats after a while.
There it is, folks. Episode, I think it's episode 13. First reference to tuchus on the podcast. It's possessed by Seth Miller.
I can bring a little Yiddish. That's basically it, but
just a little. I think you bring up an interesting point too about comfort. I've done a couple of, like I said, that 2 to 2.5 hour flights, Las Vegas, Denver, Seattle, Denver, Cincinnati, Denver were three that I can remember doing. What I would say is, on Spirit, I never sat in a regular seat for a longer than like an hour on Spirit. I've done the big front seat there for the longer flights. In Frontier, the last flight I did, I think it was Seattle, Denver, and that's probably just shy of 2 hours. And it was not, I would say like the regular seat was not terribly comfortable, although in Frontier, my bigger concern was the size of the tray table. I would think that to some degree, as silly as it sounds, having Wi-Fi on that Spirit flight, if I was going for 2 hours or 3 hours longer, probably makes the seat feel a little bit comfortable just because I'm more occupied. I'm not squirming around.
Yeah, this is the and none of them really are willing to talk about it or admit it, but this is the way the airlines are getting away with shrinking personal space on board, is they're distracting you. They put a big screen in front of you. They give you Wi-Fi. They're doing whatever they can to make you not notice that you do, in fact, have a little less space than you used to.
Yeah, and I'm not terribly surprised that Spirit's not offering movies. I think essentially, you know, like with everything with Spirit, it's, you know, how can they earn more money? And so, you know, if the movies added cost to the offering, they probably just said, well, no, we'll just let the people, you know, bring their own movies and we'll save the, you know, however many pennies per session, which I can't imagine it'd be a ton. But you know, I can't imagine.
But, yeah. And so I'm with you. There obviously has to be a business justification for doing it. What's interesting to me about the business arrangement between Talos and Spirit is no one's explicitly stated it, but reading between the lines through some of the quotes, it sounds like Talos is footing the bill for getting all the hardware on board and taking all of the financial risk, or if not all, substantially all, right? The quotes from Spirit are things like, this will not affect our pricing for other products and will not change the fares we charge and things like that. So
yeah.
they really are focusing on making it clear that it's not really a cash outlay on their part. One of the main, or one of these several business models around these products has been the vendor, in this case Talos, foots the bill but keeps the revenue, or keeps the bulk of the revenue. And so if you remember when Continental put the live television on its 737s, that was also a Talos product.
Yeah.
It was live TV at the time, but Talos has since purchased live TV. And that was also one where live TV at the time, now Talos, assumed the vast, vast majority of the capital outlay, but kept the vast majority of the revenue as well. And so the additional cost to have the sort of media on board and the streaming media is basically, you know, you need a web server. Okay, well, you already have one because you need that for the regular connections. You need the access points. You need all these things. The vast majority of it is really already there. And so, yes, there may be some content costs, but if you're charging for the movies anyways, you're recouping that real quickly, in my opinion. So it's a little surprising to me, looking at how I think these businesses should run. So either I'm an idiot and don't really understand them, or there's something else in play. But, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
I wasn't thinking – yeah, definitely column B. I wasn't thinking about them charging for the movies, I guess. I was thinking of the model now where, you know, I'm logging onto the United app or, you know, American and getting, you know, some prepackaged selection of free movies. But you bring up a good point. If they put the content out there and charged for it, then – no harm, no foul if nobody picks it up, as you say, because most of the elements are already there. I'll really be interested to see the speeds when this rolls out, because I mean, everything you're painting seems to paint a picture that this will be a reasonable speed and at a reasonable price for this product, which would definitely be a welcome change to the, you know, three or four times a year that I fly Spirit.
Yeah, and I agree. I am cautiously optimistic, but knowing what little I know about which satellites are involved and who else is using them and what the capacity is and whatnot, I think that this really does have potential to be a good option.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Well, it sounds like we're going to try and have you back on either as a staple on to this episode or potentially for a future episode for a product that shall remain nameless for just a few more days that you'll be testing out. Until we have you back on again, tell people where they can find you when you're not getting cool lines like Fort Lauderdale to Copenhagen.
Oh, God, where am I? I have no idea. Oh, you mean like on the internet, not just physically in my body.
The interwebs.
On the interwebs. Twitter and Instagram is probably where most of my stuff is on a frequent basis, and that's at WANDRME. And as you mentioned earlier in the show, paxx.aero is a website where I write about passenger experience and in-flight connectivity and seats and all sorts of things that airlines are doing these days.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming back on the podcast, Seth.
Always a pleasure. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys, we'll be right back. Stay tuned on the Miles to Go podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you know the places miles and points can take you. Maybe you've been saving up those miles and points to plan that special once-in-a-lifetime trip, but you can't find what you're looking for. The experts at BookYourAward.com have redeemed over 3 billion miles. That's billion, with a B. You won't find anyone with more experience to book your dream vacation. BookYourAward.com will provide you with concierge booking services to get you where you want to go, how you want to get there, and using the rewards program of your choice, all for a lot less than the cost of a domestic coach airline ticket. For listeners of the Miles to Go podcast, we've got a special limited time offer for the month of May. Receive a $25 Amazon gift card with your first paid booking at bookyourreward.com. Drop us a line at milestogopodcast@gmail.com with your itinerary for more details. And we're back on the Miles to Go podcast. We're going to switch from talking about Spirit Airlines Wi-Fi and why that might make me want to fly them more. And we've got Jen back for another It's a Big Deal segment. And it's one of those things that I've actually, I can't say I've never done it, but very infrequently have ever been one of those guys as an advocate of purchasing points. But not only does Jen have some information up on her blog about why you might want to purchase hotel points, but she actually has a great scenario that she's outlined where she's actually saving money. Hey, Jen, welcome back.
Hi, Ed. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm getting ready for summer.
Yeah, you and me both. We got thunderstorms and nasty weather here in D.C., but I am certainly looking forward to the kids being out of school and doing some traveling.
Yes, likewise.
All right, so hit me with this scenario. I'm interested to hear because I'm usually a skeptic about buying points.
I hear you. I mean, throughout my blog, I always say don't speculatively purchase points. Like, you never know what's going to happen. You never know what programs are going to devalue. You don't want to be just left with a pile of points that you ultimately can't use and don't get the value from. But Hyatt is one of those programs that actually runs promotions quite often, actually, throughout the year, where if you purchase points, you'll get a certain percentage bonus. And the promotion going on right now is actually one of their better ones. So if you purchase 5,000 to 9,000 points, you'll receive a 30% bonus. But actually, if you purchase 10,000 plus points, you'll receive a 40% bonus, which is pretty high. You're able to purchase up to 55,000 points, giving you a total of 77,000 points if you need to purchase points. Of course, typically I'm in the scenario where I have a nice balance of points and I don't need to purchase points. But I actually have a situation where purchasing points is going to help out, not necessarily me, but my in-laws. So my in-laws are looking to take myself, my family, and my husband's two brothers and their respective families on a big family vacation next year. And they have a few criteria, check the boxes, and they want all-inclusive ultimately. And so I really researched some things, and the Hyatt Ziva Cancun is what came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. We've been there before. We really like it. We figured, let's just do what we know. We have the kids, and let's not make this complicated. So since my father-in-law is the one really treating us, I fortunately don't need to go into my pocket of points, but he's actively trying to accrue some Hyatt points along the way. Unfortunately, three rooms over a week's stay, he's just not going to have all the points necessary. I mean, that's a ton of points, 25,000 points a night at this Hyatt. So we're looking to go during peak time. Of course, we're looking to get out of Boston, you know, in the winter.
Yeah.
And nights there can easily cost about $600 a night for two people. I mean, that's the best rate you're going to get typically. If you want to go over the summer or another time, better rates. But winter time, it's peak time down there. So now if you go ahead and purchase the points, you can actually purchase up to 77,000 points per account. So if you purchase 75,000 points, it's going to cost you about $1,300. That comes out to about $430 a night for those three nights. Easily $170 in savings per night. So now, although he'll be capped at just three nights on his account, he can purchase from his wife's account, and we can make this work. So it's, I mean, a huge savings, about, you know, $500 per room, $1,500 per room that we can save on, which is, I mean, that's a nice chunk of change just for purchasing points. So it's literally a flat $432 per night, which is a pretty good deal for an all-inclusive, quite honestly. I've been doing a bunch of research. Any other resort might sound expensive, but when everything is included and they do a good job, it's not so bad. So that is my real life scenario of how we're going to go ahead, purchase points, and save money along the way. Although we're still trying to accrue more points, chase points, and have points as we can.
Yeah, we've done a couple of the Hyatt all inclusives, and I've been pretty impressed with the food. More impressed than I probably thought I would be with it. And so, you know, when you're saying you're spending $400 for a double occupancy room, you know, food. You know, we're not huge drinkers, but you know, a couple glasses of wine with dinner, or whatever. You know, that's a pretty good deal. It really does. And you know, for Cancun. In the wintertime, yeah, I mean, you're not going to find a ton cheaper unless you're going, you know, what I would call like, you know, dangerously uninhabitable you know, you're not sure what kind of food you're going to get, what kind of room you're going to get for an all-inclusive.
Right. Yeah. So that's, I mean, it's a pretty good deal for us. We enjoy that hotel and we're going to enjoy using our points. And, you know, this particular property, there is no resort fee. But one also thing to note that when you use your points, you don't pay a resort fee. So let's say you're going to do the math out. If you're going to do the math out for another hotel you're looking to stay at, make sure to keep that resort fee in mind, because only global, those who are globalists, have a waived resort fee when paying for it. So if you're using points, no matter what status you have, as long as you're a member, you know, as long as you have some sort of Hyatt status, you won't pay a resort fee, which is pretty good.
No, that's right. When you figure most resort fees are at least $25 a night, then in theory, you know, redeeming points, so quote unquote buying points, would calculate another $25 per night or more savings, depending on what the resort fee is for a specific property. Awesome.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll definitely hand it to you.
Too.
It's one scenario that I would certainly say you guys are absolutely right to be buying points. I don't find myself in the game very often, but you're right. That's a perfect opportunity for you and your family to save some good money on that trip.
Absolutely. So I'm sure I still have to tell my father-in-law about this entire deal.
Well, you better hurry up. He's only got a couple weeks left. So before we run away, tell people where they can find you.
You can go ahead and find me at dealswelike.com or on Twitter at dealswelike. Send me an email at dealswelike@gmail.com. So pretty much anything in the Deals We Like name, you'll be able to find me.
There you go. Jen with Deals We Like. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast with a destination in Florida for families that you might not be thinking about for your next trip, but you probably should. Be right back. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. As we head down the final stretch of this week's episode, I was thinking about places that I want to visit with my family. And, you know, one of the things as a family traveler that we end up doing are, you know, sometimes going off the beaten path. Yes, our kids go to Orlando. They've been to Disney. They've been to Universal. But a couple of years ago, when we were planning a trip fairly late in the game, we ended up taking a spring break trip to Fort Myers, which, if you don't know, is on the west coast of Florida. It was more affordable. We found a really great property. It wasn't hard to get into restaurants. It was, you know, a much better spring break experience, even though it wasn't, say, in Fort Lauderdale or Miami. And so, you know, my friend Angelina, who writes the Angelina Travels blog, I just happened to wander across one of her posts a few days ago where she took a vacation to Jacksonville with her family. Admittedly, it's a place I've only driven through, but I thought it was really interesting that she had a very similar trip to me in terms of a place to go with her family that wasn't one of the big hot spots in Florida. So Angelina is back with us on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Hey, Ed. Good. I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be back. And yes, I did just get back from Jacksonville. And just like you, growing up and throughout the years, I've always taken my kids to Florida, especially, you know, when the weather in New York gets brutally cold in the winter. So our hot spots have always been Miami, Orlando for Disney. But this time around, I stumbled across a promotion back in the fall. It was called Kids Free November. So naturally, free is a word that I love. So I checked out the promotion, and I saw that Jacksonville, Florida had some tourism push where they were offering kid-friendly attractions for free as long as there was a paying adult. So with the promotion, you can get up to 5 children with 1 adult admission. So I was already hooked on that. So I reached out. I wanted to learn more information, and I was actually invited to come check out Jacksonville. So I saw a good fair deal during spring break. It was during my daughter's birthday. So we made a family trip out of it, and I booked flights, nonstop flights from JFK to Jacksonville with JetBlue points, and we had a great time.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that JetBlue flew JFK Jacksonville, so I learned something new from the post just when I saw that, which I think is good because, you know, again, the typical Miami's, Orlando's, those are going to be, you know, the most expensive of the spring break trips that you can take. So I'm guessing that your airfare probably wasn't brutal since it's a revenue-based program with JetBlue. I assume your tickets weren't super expensive.
No, no, they were not super expensive. I think for a family of four, we redeemed, I want to say, I don't know the exact number, but it was less than 50,000 round trip for all of us.
That's great.
And it was, yeah, nonstop flight, direct service right into Jacksonville. And, you know, United also flies nonstop from Newark, which, you know, is better for me, but I had this a boatload of JetBlue points from previous promotions, so I thought it would be a great use. And when we went to Jacksonville, it was awesome because it was a totally different vibe. You know, Miami is super expensive. It's party-centric. I mean, that's fun for us, but with the kids in tow, it gets expensive with other restaurants tacking on these mandatory gratuities and, you know, inflated prices. But I was just blown away by how affordable Jacksonville was as a family destination. It's you got your beaches. You have all kinds of family-friendly spots. There's Adventure Landing, which is a amusement park, and there's Shipwreck Island, which is a water park, and you can do all kinds of activities for under $20 a person. You can spend the whole day there. There are actually some great restaurants that we tried. I was, you know, pleasantly surprised to find good food because it's hard to find good food in Florida. You know, we live in New York, and you have all the best restaurants at your fingertip, but then you're blown away when you go to Florida and you actually find some good pizza. I was actually shocked.
Yeah, some of the food stuff looked really good for me. Like the biscuits that you had, Maple Street biscuits, looked great. And I do agree. Yeah. The pizza looked awesome. I'm certainly skeptical, as you can imagine, because I'm a New York pizza kind of guy. But it's great to hear that you know, twofold. One, that you found good food, but that it didn't break the bank, which I think is a big part of trying to plan the affordable family vacation is. Most families aren't going to try and buy a bunch of groceries and cook in their hotel room. So finding affordable, good restaurants is key.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, too, is that a lot of the attractions in Jacksonville, it's under $10. Most of them are really cheap. There's a zoo. There's a museum. There's the surf lessons you can do, a private surf lesson if you like going to the beach. Actually, I've never done any surfing in my entire life, and I was amazed that the instructor promised me I would stand up, and I was like, okay, buddy. And I actually did, so I was very proud of myself. But yeah, it's becoming a very popular destination, I would say, because they just opened up a brand new Four Points hotel and a Courtyard by Marriott. Those are two very new beachfront properties that people can use their points at. And I love that it had a bit of Southern charm, because usually when you go to Florida, you have the upscale, snotty Miami vibe. But since Jacksonville is north, on the northeast side, on the Atlantic Ocean, it borders Georgia, and there, you know, you have that Southern hospitality element, which is really, really nice.
Yeah, it's funny. When you mentioned that to me before we hopped on the call, I hadn't even thought about that you don't get the South Florida vibe, because you're right. Jacksonville is, pretty far north. And, you know, I think you brought up one thing in your review that's been a key for us on our vacations when traveling with kids, which are, some people call them children's museums or science museums. They're generally fairly low cost to get into, and they're generally geared towards younger kids. And we've made a great use of them on rain days. We've also folded them in when we've been on longer trips. We'll sort of plug it in the middle of the trip as sort of just like a decompressed day for the kids, where they can go just run around the children's museum for 3 or 4 hours and not have a big structured day with a bunch of tours. And they're almost always, I think in your review it was $10 a day, and that's what we're normally used to seeing. Is it's an activity that a family of four can do for under $50 a day, and have a lot of fun without having to worry about what the weather's like. So I think it's a good tip for folks who are looking for something to do that isn't an amusement park and isn't affected by weather when they're traveling.
Yeah, exactly, and that's great too, because Jacksonville is so spread out. You have the beach, but you also have a really nice downtown area that has great restaurants, and that's where the museums are. There's also a really famous candy shop called Sweet Pete's that we went to. It's like children's paradise. Yeah, it's multi-level. It's, four or five floors of just candy, ice cream. There's a factory tour you can do if you like, where they can make their own chocolate bar. So yeah, it was really nice. And, Jacksonville is actually a military town, so the average age is 36, I believe, and that's pretty young. So it's a lot of young families. They love when young kids come and visit. So it was something that was great for us to check out.
Yeah, no, I agree. I, the you know, the thing about trying to find the perfect place for family vacation is to some degree, you've got to cross off the places everybody wants to go. No question. Kids got to go to Disney World, all that stuff. But sometimes it's trying to find out where everybody else isn't. So you're not, inundated by the crowds. And it sounds like you didn't run into a ton of crowds down there during spring break.
Oh, yeah. No, the beaches were empty. I felt like I had the whole beach to myself. It was a little bit chilly when we were there, but still it had like this low-key, casual surfer vibe. It was very, very relaxing. We had rented a car. We were able to take the trip at our own pace, and we really enjoyed it.
How were the water temperatures, by the way? Was it still a little chilly, I think?
It was chilly. You know what? I'm a baby when it comes to the cold, and me I was too. Like, yeah. But I had a wetsuit on when I went surfing, and that was my first time wearing it. And I know that the instructor is like, don't worry, as soon as you get to the water, you'll be warm in like 5 minutes. Your body keeps your body warm. The water warms up in your body once it gets into the suit. So I jumped in, and then he was right. I felt okay, but it was cold.
Awesome. Well, great. Before we run out of time, why don't you tell folks where they can find you?
Oh, yes. I would love for you guys to follow my travels. My blog, as Ed said, is Angelina Travels. That's angelinatravels.com. And I'm also on Instagram at Angelina Travels.
Awesome. Hey, Angelina, thanks for being on again. Hopefully we'll have you back on soon. All right, we'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. If you're listening to this podcast, you know the places miles and points can take you. Maybe you've been saving up those miles and points to plan that special once-in-a-lifetime trip, but you can't find what you're looking for. The experts at BookYourAward.com have redeemed over 3 billion miles. That's billion, with a B. You won't find anyone with more experience to book your dream vacation. BookYourAward.com will provide you with concierge booking services to get you where you want to go, how you want to get there, and using the rewards program of your choice. All for a lot less than the cost of a domestic coach airline ticket. For listeners of the Miles to Go podcast, we've got a special limited time offer for the month of May. Receive a $25 Amazon gift card with your first paid booking at BookYourAward.com. Drop us a line at milestogopodcast@gmail.com with your itinerary for more details. As we hit the final stretch for episode 13 of the Miles to Go podcast, we're in the heart of spring here on the East Coast where I live. The final two pennies today is about spring cleaning. I was helping a friend book an airline ticket to Europe the other day using miles, and we started talking about what he used miles for and what credit cards he had in his wallet. And he told me that he put all of his spending on the Southwest credit card because he used all of his points for Southwest flights for his employees. And I told him that was great, but depending on what he was spending on, there were other credit cards. And specifically, I was talking to him about the Chase Ultimate Rewards cards, Chase Sapphire, Chase Inc., that might earn him bonus points in certain categories and still transfer to Southwest at a 1-to-1 ratio. And that was something he didn't know about. It's important to think about your wallet just like you think about your hotel reservations and your airline reservations. I like to say that periodically you should feed and water your airline and hotel reservations. Make sure there are no problems. Make sure there isn't something better that you could change for a flight that pops up for award availability. Same thing with hotels, maybe a better room. Same thing with your wallet. What you want to do periodically, and I need to do this, and I'm hoping to write a blog post about it soon. But you need to go through your wallet periodically, look at the credit cards that you're spending money on, and decide, are they earning you the points that you want to be able to travel the way that you want? A good example of this is that the Starwood Preferred Guest American Express card is going to have some pretty big changes soon with the announcement of the merger between Marriott and Starwood's loyalty programs. Maybe that's a great fit for you the way the changes are. For me personally, it's not a great change, and I might be moving that card out of my wallet for the first time in, over a decade. It's important not to just assume everything you've got in your wallet still works for what it is you want. Getting to Hawaii is different than getting to Italy. And, understanding your priorities is the big key here. That's a full wrap on episode 13. If you're enjoying listening to the podcast, I hope you'll help me grow it. If you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and click the subscribe button on whatever platform you're using. And take a moment to rate the podcast. Tell us what we're doing right. Tell us what we're doing wrong. If you've got any questions, shoot me an email at ed@pizzainmotion.com. That's my blog where you can find me writing about travel every day. And don't forget to patronize our sponsors. They help us bringing you the show on a weekly basis. GoGo InFlight Internet has been our sponsor from episode one, and we welcomed BookYourAward.com to the show last week. There's a special $25 Amazon gift card for new customers of Book Your Award. Shoot me an email. I'll be happy to give you more details on that. Thanks for listening this week. Hopefully we'll see you next time. Until then, we've got miles to go.